Hey everyone, how's it going? My name is Matt Jarbo. Welcome back to another episode of Milk Carton Mysteries. Today, of course, is the 11th of January, 2021. Sorry for the lack of episodes last week. I know it's been kind of an up and down thing with the show. I do apologize for that. The situation involving the nation's capital, I felt took precedent over the week. I just wanted to sit back and watch. Like the rest of you, I was shocked and horrified by what I saw going on in the nation's capital, the insurrection, the sedition. There's no other term for it. I don't want to get too political. You may not believe what I believe, and that is absolutely fine. But that is my thought ultimately on the subject. So I wanted to just kind of give it a couple days, right? Give it a couple days before really just diving into the whole thing. So anyway, here we are, with a new set of stories to talk about. We're going to be talking about a man who brutally beat a chiropractor to death over jaw pains. It's a bit of a weird one. Then we have a missing persons case out of Colorado where a young girl went missing, but she's apparently now been found, although the story is definitely weird. And then another missing persons case out of Northern California where a man got into a fight with his girlfriend, stormed off, has been not seen since then, and some questions are being raised with everything. So before we dive in, I just want to remind everybody that the best way you can support the show is to head on over to Instagram.com/MilkCartonCast. Follow us over there. I'm going to be spending a lot more time building that up going forward, and I look forward to you guys joining us on that journey. And also be sure to share this podcast around with your friends if they want to be kept up to date with what is going on in the world of missing persons, homicides, unsolved murders, and of course, anything else that we come across here in this wild, crazy, mixed up world of ours. So without further ado, let's dive into the show. Today, we're going to be talking about this disgruntled patient who brutally beat a Bucks County chiropractor to death. The man with arguably the weirdest mugshot I've seen in quite some time, a person who looks eternally distressed, is now being held on murder charges as a result of his actions in the death, allegedly, I should say, of a chiropractor. So let's find out more. This is coming out of Bensalem, Pennsylvania, where prosecutors say a man was arrested for the murder of a Bucks County chiropractor who was a former patient who became disgruntled after seeking the doctor's help for jaw pain. Joseph O'Boyle, 22, has been charged with criminal homicide, burglary, and related charges in the brutal killing of Dr. James Sowa. According to investigators, O'Boyle visited Dr. Sowa for treatment of jaw pain. After the visit, O'Boyle allegedly became obsessed with him and blamed the 63-year-old for worsening his jaw pain. There is a level of irony there. In fact, I believe it was even brought up during a press release by the authorities about the fact that he went to the doctor seeking jaw pain relief and then ended up killing the man by beating him in the jaw. It's terrible. Now, prosecutors say O'Boyle went to his home in Bensalem back on November 2nd and beat him to death in the head and jaw with a blunt object. The killing was called poetic perverse irony, which, I mean, look, like I said, there's a level of irony there. I don't know if I would call it poetic. I kind of feel that's like saying it's karmic to an extent. Maybe that's just me. Not a huge fan of that personally. Of course, this is after O'Boyle inflicted deadly injuries to where he sought the treatment. Now, O'Boyle was identified and allegedly spotted on the home surveillance camera, arriving at Dr. Sowa's house and then leaving minutes later in a white Nissan Altima. Investigators linked the license plate on the car to a home. So think about that. He was spotted arriving at his house and then leaving only minutes later. So he showed up, brutally beat Dr. Sowa to death, and then left moments later. Now, this was back in November, but he's only now been charged with the murder. Because while being investigated as a suspect, officers were called to O'Boyle's home after he allegedly punched his father in the face. During the search of the home, O'Boyle struck an officer and was charged with and was arrested for aggravated assault. He has been in Bucks County Jail since the assault on the officer and is now facing the murder charges. So this guy is nuts. He's nuts. And I'm glad he's been locked up since November. Now, in another article, we can find out here a little bit more information about what led to this particular situation, what led to these charges being filed, and of course, the investigative process. So it says, both of his parents testified to the grand jury that their son denied any involvement, and so was death. However, they eventually admitted to lying and that O'Boyle had told them he did it. So this kid's parents, they knew. I mean, like, you know, their kid clearly has mental problems, but they knew and they said nothing. A man who looks sweet, very kind, bludgeoned to death by their son, and they can't even be bothered to tell the truth. I mean, I guess I get it. I have two kids. Would I lie for them? Probably. Would you lie for your children? Probably. But still, I mean, it's one of those things where it's hard to not cast judgment. Anyway, a friend of O'Boyle testified to the grand jury that O'Boyle began having issues in 2017 when he started taking acid. He also said that he received Snapchat messages from O'Boyle that showed he had a fascination with violence, and Cosmo DiNardo, a man who killed four young men in 2017. So what they're trying to say here, and it even goes on, and before I go into that, let's get the next section here kind of solidifies what they're talking about. Now, before that, this friend says that O'Boyle was interested in school shootings and playing the military video game Call of Duty in real life, according to the grand jury. So he had mental issues, began taking acid, had a fascination with violence, and a murderer by the name of Cosmo DiNardo. And then he also was interested in school shootings and playing Call of Duty. Now, I'm an avid gamer, so I'm not going to jump on any of the bandwagon that even remotely says that video games cause violence, because, hey, they don't. That's been proven. Study after study after study has proven that video games do not, in fact, cause violence. So that is something we need to just get out of the way right now. But this guy had problems. And the thing was, from another part that I had read, he was also on medication. And it was for his jaw. Or he had stopped taking the medication because it started hurting his jaw, which is why he went to the chiropractor in order to seek help. Now, O'Boyle has a preliminary hearing for his assault case tentatively scheduled for January 20th. He was arraigned this last week, and he remains in prison without bail. Now, Sowa, a Republican committeeman, lived at home and operated his chiropractic office out of it. His obituary states that he was a selfless father and a husband who always puts family first. And that is tragic. That is absolutely terrible. Now, the only thing I can think of, what would have triggered Sowa, is I'm wondering if anything happened that was, well, impropriety. If there might have been some kind of assault. Now, here's the reason why I bring this up. I know people who have seen these at-home therapeutic chiropractor types, and it got weird. All right, and to be honest with you, I'm one of those people. I had a situation in 2004. I was having foot problems. I went to this spiritual healer, chiropractor type guy in San Diego, and the situation turned very weird, very quick. And at the end of the treatment, he had asked me if I wanted to watch him more or less perform oral on another man in front of his wife and to help with their marital problems. I'm not making this up. I am not making this up. I got the hell out of there. I owed the guy money. I never paid him. I left. I'm like, dude, no way. I'm done. But that happened to me in 2004. And so I'm just, you know what I mean? I'm reading this story and I'm just wondering if something like that might have happened. Now, the news has not stipulated to that. They have not suggested that. The likelihood of that being a reality is probably very minimal. But I can only discuss these particular situations based upon my own interaction and my own experiences. That's how I come to my own conclusions and theories. So I can only hope that Dr. Sowa didn't do anything wrong and that this is a tragic, tragic scenario and one that I hope ultimately gets itself figured out. You know, this is a weird story that is coming out of Denver, especially Denver International Airport, where this teen has been missing after taking the A train from the airport. Her name is Whitney Lolof. Okay. And it's a crazy story because it's got some weird bits and pieces to it that a lot of people have been talking about, even though they've effectively made contact with her at this point. It's still, I have questions. So let's just dive in. So a 16-year-old girl who was supposed to meet her family at a Denver International Airport after returning home from a trip instead boarded the A-line train and later exited the 61st Avenue / Penn Station, according to the Denver Police Department. Whitney Lolof was last seen walking east on 61st Avenue, according to a spokesperson. So she is supposed to meet her family at Denver International Airport coming home from a trip to see her father. She instead boards a subway and then takes it off and she walks off and no one knows where she is. Now, right now, and this is the article, Denver Police Department believes that she left the airport alone. It's unclear why she boarded that train and traveled to the station, which is the closest to the airport. So she basically took the train to the next station, got off and walked away. Her mother, Karen Kopp, says, I feel like I can literally collapse because this is so scary, or I can pick it up and be strong and find her. And I've watched interviews with the mom at this point. I've watched interviews with her talking, and she, yeah, it's like legitimately scary. Like, what would you do? What would you do if your kid went missing? Now, a missing persons poster on social media shared by family says that Whitney could have blonde or black hair. Cops said that her daughter was wearing new clothes and a dark colored wig when she got off the plane at Denver International Airport. According to cops, she was also carrying a different suitcase than the one she left home with on December 19th. Cop says she was unable to reach her daughter's phone because it was later found in Las Vegas. So the story has an odd setup. She comes home from Arizona. Her phone ends up in Las Vegas somehow. Apparently the flight from Phoenix, or I'm assuming Phoenix, to Denver was a nonstop. So how her phone ended up in Vegas, I have no idea. And then she was wearing a wig, carrying a different suitcase, and fled. Interesting. Now, her mom says this is past her capability to have planned stuff, and it seemed like there was an element of fear for her. Yeah, I think there was. But I don't think this was her inability to plan stuff here. I don't believe the mom on that one, because looking into it a bit more, she actually went missing in 2019. She's run away from home before. They found her, but this time she was clearly more prepared. So when her mom says this is past her capability to have planned stuff, I would say that's an outright lie. Anyway, the FBI's Child Exploitation and Human Trafficking Task Force said that they are assisting the Dallas Police Department with the investigation. So the FBI is involved, which means they probably already found her. Whitney's family told the news that they are grateful to law enforcement for their efforts to locate the 16-year-old. And this is where it gets a little bit weird. So there's this post from a guy on Facebook, this guy named Evan M. Todd, who, according to his profile, is like an entrepreneur motivational speaker type. And he just says here, wow, I just got off the phone with Whitney Lolof. She is safe with a family from the Mormon church. They have contacted law enforcement and social services. Well, not only that, but this little video popped up and had a lot of people really confused.
Hi, my name is Whitney Lolof. I am safe, and I did talk to Evan Todd, and I gave him my side of the story from what I've been hearing about false information.
Yeah, so she had given this guy her side of the story, but he hasn't posted her side of the story, so I literally have no idea. So he just posted this, has a lot of people talking about it, because again, a missing person's case is a missing person's case. And then Cami Lolof Milleron, who I'm assuming is related, I'm not too sure to what extent, says, update, we are heartened to report that Whitney has been in touch with law enforcement investigators as we hope she will soon return to safe haven. We appreciate your continued prayers and support. We are humbled by the outpouring of care that we received from all over the world during the past week and are grateful for the pivotal role that support played in facilitating this update. As we seek to begin the next steps of the healing process, we equally appreciate your respect for the privacy of all involved. Thank you for your love, concern, and tangible support. It has made the difference. And that, of course, is also followed up here by a post a few days ago from the Denver Police Department. They said here that they have made progress in the case. And while Whitney's whereabouts are still unknown, it is believed that she is voluntarily refusing to return home. Investigators are currently working to gather more information to locate her and to make sure that she is safe. So we don't know what's going on. But I'm not going to try to over-speculate here. I might a little bit, okay? It's kind of what I do. But, you know, looking at the situation, you've got 16-year-old girl, has made attempts to run away before, goes to visit her father out of state, decides to come back wearing a wig and a new suitcase, leaves her phone somewhere that ends up getting on a plane going to Las Vegas in order to trick people into thinking that she was gone. And she doesn't want to come home. And she apparently told her story to somebody, some random guy, I have no idea, but he says that she's now at home or she's now safe with someone from the Mormon church. So that one little piece of line, in my opinion, that one little line about the Mormon church, what that says to me is that this is something to do with her mom. And you could tell with that line her mom gave the news. My daughter is incapable of doing this, right? She might as well just come out and say, my daughter is a teenager and my daughter is a dummy. There's no way my daughter could plan this. There's no way my daughter could pull this off. Clearly she's scared. Clearly something's happening. And I partly think it's like she did everything she could to literally avoid detection from authorities once she got off the plane in Dallas or in Denver. I mean, she even sent her phone away so it would be pinging in another location to throw people off. So, like I said, this is clearly within her wheelhouse, but she probably had help. And if I had to guess, if I had to speculate, I'd say the dad had something to do with it, right? The dad and the mom are no longer together. She lives with the mom. The mom clearly doesn't believe that she's capable of doing anything herself. So maybe she decided to just leave. Maybe she told her dad, I'm going to go home, but I'm just going to run away. So why didn't you help me? Maybe they established a safe place for her to go in order to get away from her mom. I mean, at this point, she's 16. She could technically file for emancipation. She could do a number of different things. She can choose where she wants to live. And maybe she wants to be back in Phoenix or Arizona with her father. I don't know. Either way, the story like this has blown up a bit, and a lot of people are talking about it because they want to know what's going on with Whitney K. Lulloff. And if we don't know the full story about it, and truth be told, I don't know if we will. But at least we know that she's safe, and at least we know that she has been found, and that she's currently trying to do something for her. And you know what? Good for her, to be honest with you. Good for her. If she lives in an oppressive household where her mother doesn't have any respect for her, and she chose this as a chance to get out, by all means, do it. I'm okay. I support it, personally. I don't know about you, but I support it. Anyway. And finally, let's talk about this missing persons case out of Northern California near the Emeryville Marina. Police are looking for a man named Lucas Horan. They say here that the Emeryville police are asking the public to help find a man who's been missing since Thursday. This, of course, is a bit of an older article. He's been missing since December 24th. Authorities said that 39-year-old Lucas Horan was last seen in the water swimming from a boat near the Emeryville Marina. It's unclear if he was seen struggling to stay afloat. He was last seen wearing a gray fleece jacket. The color of his other clothes are not available. And if you have any information of this, of course, you can contact the Emeryville Police Department at 510-596-3700. That's 510-596-3700. So where is him? Where is Lucas Horan? Right now, there's a $2,000 reward for his safe return. And the man has a lot of people out there that are looking for him. In fact, even a website called whereislucas.com is available, where they have this little tidbit here about where he was last seen. So this is what this website is run by his fiance. And this is what she says. She says, "We have been told Lucas was last seen by his neighbor between 11:30 and 12:30 a.m. Christmas Eve going into Christmas Day in the shallow water of the Emeryville Marina. Lucas and his neighbor had gone for a boat ride, and Lucas apparently decided to swim back to shore, which was estimated to be about 100 to 200 yards. The neighbor believes to have seen Lucas make it to shallow water and headed up to the rocks to climb back onto shore." Now, from KK, his fiance, she says Lucas is a very capable swimmer, and it is not uncharacteristic of him to want to take a dip in cold water. But to the rest of us who pay attention to this, that is an absolutely crazy thing. It's 11:30 p.m. and 12:30 a.m. on Christmas Eve. You just happen to be out in the Emeryville Marina. It's a little bit weird, okay? But here's again what it talks about, what he has with him and what he doesn't have. So there's no car and no cell phone. His car is still in the marina. His cell phone was at his boat and is currently with the cops. They are working to get access to see if there's any clues. He's got no driver's license or ID. And he may be going by the name Lucas Savage as opposed to Lucas Horan, given that he was planning to change his name once we got married. Savage is actually his mother's maiden name, which is really weird that they were going to get married and then he was going to change his last name to his mother's maiden name. And then it's I don't know. I have no idea. It says here he has likely very little running gear because he didn't bring anything with him. He possibly has a credit card, saying here that he may have his card with him, although it's uncertain whether he's been spending any money on it or not. Well, the thing is the cops would be able to contact the credit card company and be able to find out exactly if he's been spending any money or not. She says here that he was most likely wearing running shoes, saying that we were told he was wearing running shoes when he jumped into the water, so it's likely he wore them out of the water, but it's possible that he ditched the wet shoes, although none have been found, or did not have a pair of shoes on, which would be surprising. And says here finally that he most likely did not return to the boat after taking his swim. Lucas's parents went onto the boat with Detective this recently, and it did not appear that he came back to the boat to change clothes. Further, we have been told by police that they have scanned the video footage from the Emeryville Marina cameras going out to the docks and around the public areas, and he was not seen. So this is the Emeryville Marina. It's you know, right there in Emeryville, California. It's a nice-looking marina. It's pretty small from the looks of it. But if you zoom in up here, you can see the rocks that she is talking about, I think. It's in the north part of the marina where there is a nice walking trail, and it's in Northern California, you know, very nice up there. And that's where he went, but then he somehow swam over there. But in order for him to get anywhere, he would have had to most likely walk the walking trail and walk back out and walk towards the city. And people would have probably seen him. And so far, the authorities are saying that they haven't seen him anywhere. So what gives? Well, this is where things get a little bit weird. So KK, his fiance, has been posting a lot of stuff about this. And she's now also been scrubbing a lot of stuff about this. This is a snippet from her Instagram post that I think gives a little bit of an overview. Now, she says, on the day of Lucas's disappearance, he had planned a surprise excursion for me as a Christmas present. In usual Lucas fashion, he had come up with an insanely creative and deeply personal idea tailor-made for his extraterrestrial-obsessed space camp alum of a gal. Lucas had tracked down a meteor expert to not only give us a full meteor lesson, but also purchase a real-deal meteor. That day, however, we didn't end up going. When the communication snagged, I got irritated. Rather than be patient, I was short. Rather than be affectionate, I was matter of fact. After some back and forths about whose tone was out of line, I asked Lucas to get out of the car and walk home to his boat, and this was the last time I saw him. So that is a shorter version of what happened. She had written this longer version of what happened on the website, where she talks about like how they fought and then how they like, kind of came back together and they like cooler heads prevailed and then they fought again. And she asked him to get out of the car and leave. Now, again, that whole exchange is weird because it's one of those situations when you're like, okay, hold on a second. You were the last person to see him outside of this neighbor with whom we have no idea who this neighbor is. And there's been no public confirmation from said neighbor that I've been able to find or anyone else in the True Crime Society group where I'm getting a lot of this information. So there's been a lot of speculation about whether or not this neighbor actually exists and whether or not KK invented him. And I say that because she's been active in a lot of these groups that have been talking about this and making it a lot about her. Her Instagram is full of posts with very interesting things to say on it. Like this one where she effectively kind of ends the investigation a little bit, but just let me read it to you. She says, "I'm letting go of attempting to find Lucas. I do not believe Lucas drowned, and I do not believe he is dead. I know Lucas, and I believe he is alive someplace. I believe that, similar to me, he became overwhelmed with the immense cruelty of this world, and it breaks my heart to know that I pushed him over that edge. But I have given up on being able to find him. If he wants to come back, he will. And I can't do anything to change whether he wants to come back or not. I've gotten some inquiries in the email as to questions about the case, including some suspicions about my quote-unquote fishy behavior, as well as specific questions about the case and what is happening. I will respond to all of those in the next few days and then hand over the inbox officially to someone else to help field any Lucas insights. Thanks to everyone for what you have done. You are welcome to continue searching if you would like, but my preference would be for everyone to just go back to their families and lives and not waste any more time searching for him. I will believe he will come back when he wants to. Lots of love to everyone reading this. Thank you so much for being kind and supportive." So she, keep in mind, today's the 11th. This is a couple of days old. He went missing on the 24th. It's like 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And she's already giving up on it. She's already giving up on it. And she tells people, don't waste your time. When she was trying to organize, search parties of people who like to run. You know, she's on all of these different outlets to like run and people who love to go and do the kind of urban stuff that that he likes to, or like the hiking and the running and the jogging, not the urban. I don't know why I said that, but all the other things. And now she's saying, "I'm letting go of attempting to find it." It's just weird to me. It's just real weird. But there's a bit of a conspiracy here. There's kind of a weird side of this that I don't know if it has anything to land on or not, but according to Lucas's profile on researchgate.net, he is part of the Department of Molecular and Cell Biology at the University of California, Berkeley. And it says here that he currently works at the Department of Molecular and Cell Biology, University of California, Berkeley. Lucas does research in clinical immunology, cancer research, and cell biology. Their most recent publication is targeting alpha fetoprotein and with MHC complex and CAR T cell therapy for liver cancer. That's beyond my scope of understanding completely. But the guy works with, okay, molecular and cell biology. Well, according to his friend on Twitter, who is one of the persons that's out there trying to keep the subject alive, she posted a while back, "The last time I talked to Lucas was December 22nd, 2020. We were discussing his big breakthrough with a COVID nasal spray at Eureka Thera," which is where, I guess, one of the places that he's working now, or he was working. So he was working on something, a big breakthrough with the COVID nasal spray. And she links over to like a vaccine article. So that's interesting, isn't it? That's pretty fascinating that she's going to talk about this. Like, this guy was working on COVID vaccines, which is something we all desperately need right now. And then he just left. Right. He got fed up with this cruel world as he's working on a way to all intents and purposes, trying to find a way to save it. And then he just goes missing. Look, okay. I mean, we could argue a couple different theories here. All right. To be fair, a couple different theories we could argue. One could easily be Lucas got in a fight with his girlfriend, stormed off, met up with a neighbor. They went for a nighttime run. They went for a nighttime boat ride on Christmas Eve of all times. Why wasn't he with his family? Okay, whatever. No cell phone. No wallet. No identification. Goes for a swim in a gray fleece. That's the only clothing they can identify. The neighbor wasn't like he was in a gray fleece and he was in, jeans or shorts or whatever. They don't know if he even had shoes on. And he didn't take his boat out. I mean, I've seen better plots in Lifetime movies where it's super predictable who did it. I've seen better plots. So did Lucas, was his fiance involved in this situation? I don't know. I'm not going to say she was or wasn't. I don't know enough about it, but I'm not. It's, at this time, she's like, she acknowledges that she has had fishy behavior and she's been scrubbing certain things that she's put out there. And she's been trying to control the narrative of the conversations of some of the other groups that she's been in. So it comes across to me that she is a bit on the whole controlling side. And that could be something that's a factor. I don't know. And the other theory is that he was close to a COVID breakthrough and someone killed him. I want to ask you out there, which one of these theories do you think is real? He just got tired of the cruelty of the world and he took off, right? He just noped out into the woods for a while. Fiance got mad, killed him, ditched the body, put out everything, right? Or COVID vaccination assassination. I don't want to put on my tinfoil here, but I'm not thinking it's that. That's a bit of a reach, but it's a weird story. And as always, I want to hear your thoughts. Well, guys, that actually wraps up today's episode. That Lucas story sat with me all night. Same with the Whitney one. I was up way later going down a rabbit hole when prepping this episode than I originally thought I would. I'm glad Whitney's okay. I still think there's something going on with the family on that one. And then, of course, the situation with Lucas here is like, come on, come on, come on. But as always, I want to hear your thoughts. Facebook.com/groups/ The Milk Carton is a great way to jump on in. And then Instagram.com/ Milk Carton Cast, Patreon.com/Matt Jarbo. Great way to help out there. All right, everyone. Thank you very much for all your patience with me. I really appreciate it. I love you lots. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great one and peace out.